Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Apologies up front. Immediately, I sound like death, but there are no understudies, and the show must go on. So, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I don't think you sound that bad, really. I think you're sexy.
You're sexy. I can't even do. The funk has been strong in this area. But listen, nothing that a quick nap, 800 milligrams of Motrin and a cup of coffee can't fix, at least for the next 40 minutes.
So cup of coffee in the big time.
Well, we'll see how I feel when I have to sit down and do a whole project on, like, contribution margins and break-even points and indifference points after this, but we'll see.
You know, I think we might be there.
We'll see if I can rally as such after. But, you know, before we get into this, as always, our listeners are the most appreciated here. Head over to modstate.com for more opinion pieces, and we're revamping the site. Well, slowly, you may not see it, but it is coming. John has been diligently working at that.
There's been a few visible changes.
Yeah, indeed.
Subtle, perhaps.
On top of that, a few technology advances, which hopefully bring a better listening experience to you, minus my voice and sinus congestion on this go-around. Although I do have...
You sound fine.
Thanks. I do, however, wish I could keep this wonderful radio bass voice, but that won't last too long. So
yeah, I mean, you got a Barry White thing going on right now, man.
Yeah.
Roll with it.
Yeah, we'll roll. We'll use it. So, I do want to acknowledge, at least on our hosting site, which is podomatic.com, that we've made, I would say over the last couple of years that we've been doing this, we always sit around at a metric, and we're not metric hawks, but I think data is pretty cool. And we've sort of ascended, especially in the last couple of weeks, in around the number two spot for politics, and at least within that category, which is really exciting. I think it just shows our persistence, maybe not our quality that we bring, but certainly persistence has paid off. So we seem to be speaking to a broader audience as of late, and that's been
and really apparently exciting. We're stuck with one another.
Yeah, I guess that's the case. So
we're glad to have you.
Indeed.
We very much appreciate it, and it's shown through different polls that we've referenced, obviously, that, you know, like the one 70% of the audience people polled feel better when they hear about the polar opposite viewpoint afterwards, you know, and unfortunately nobody else is doing it, but when they do join, the more the merrier. But
indeed. Well, diving into today is a Saturday, so we've had a number of interesting things happen over the week. A few of them, well, maybe all of them, have not been too consequential in terms of immediate impact. However, there's a couple that we would certainly hope will have some positive impact for the United States over, I don't know, well, starting 2020 at least. So
forever.
And bigly. I think we'll keep impeachment topic towards the end.
And yeah, so since we promised we were more or less done with it.
Well, it's, again, I think...
It's like Hydra.
Yeah. I think what we'll actually bring up on this episode today isn't necessarily about strategy, political strategy with McConnell, et cetera, but more or less the little side stories that are popping up around it that I quite frankly find more fascinating than the fact
that...
Well,
the witnesses.
Let's just save it. Let's dive into the two sort of geopolitical and economic consequence type topics, and that would be, of course, the movement forward of the UCM excuse me, USMCA, which is
that one.
Yes, that one. Which again, hoping that there will be a net benefit to American workers. I think that the fact that there was quite bipartisan support around this is, it's like, wow, that's pretty amazing today in Washington that there was some bipartisan support for this. And hopefully, you know, there's some wins on either side, some more worker protection stuff in there. So I think everyone is able to use this as a win.
American dairy has access to the Canadian market for the first time in who knows how long.
Yeah, which, frankly, in terms of competition, the American dairy market is struggling as of late, and maybe not.
Yeah, Borden that filed for bankruptcy?
There's a couple that have filed for bankruptcy. And
yeah,
you know,
Borden's pretty big.
Yeah, whether that is actual consolidation of a few large companies.
It doesn't mean they're going out of business. Look at Sears.
Yeah, and much of the reason the dairy industry really has suffered is because of there's quite a few alternatives now, and so you just don't see the volume and quantity of milk at least being consumed. So,
well, I do my part. I consume whole milk.
And so do I, my friend. In fact, there was a study that came out that showed, I don't remember the consequence of drinking whole milk as a kid. It had some net positive benefit for children that had drank whole milk as kids, and I remember my mom hating it because you're gonna, you know, number of issues, yeah, I guess, associated with whole milk. But a study came out and said that there really wasn't any, at least negative effect of drinking it. But anyway,
I can believe it.
And then the other, which I think is actually more interesting, would be the phase one of the China trade war. That was signed on Wednesday, and you know, of course, we don't see any immediate effects of that. However, there's a couple interesting things, not only just about China, but I guess I would like to start with an issue that I take with this entire thing, and it's been 2 years since this has started, and it's been really hard for me over the last couple years, or maybe not the couple years, but as the consequence of the trade war started to appear in the United States, that there was a perpetual narrative that was pushed that China is really paying for this, and which is true. I think China has actually, it wasn't as if China could just switch its supply chains and just sell a bunch of products the same that they do, and I don't mean sell, but export to different countries at the same volume they could the United States.
You think they do business with us because they like us?
No, that's not it. I mean, it's all business. But the fact that
it did hurt them.
Of course it did. And I'm not denying the fact that it did. I think the problem that I had was that there was a perpetual narrative pushed that, and whether this is just propaganda or it was to keep people engaged in a positive light with the trade war, was that it was as if China was paying for all of it. Where there was just a study that came out.
There was a wave of farmer suicides, apparently.
Yeah, there was a study that just came out that showed that and I'll find the study and I can link it in the show notes, that the cost of the trade war to the average American, meaning aggregate or across the board, was around $800. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot for maybe someone who's living above the would be the average standard of living. I think the mean salary in the United States was about 62,000. You have to bear with me on that. It's somewhere in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, $800 does go a long way. And
well, let's stop and think a second though about that number. Okay, I get it. An average is an average. All right. However, that means probably people like you and I, it cost us $13 to $15. There were probably some people that really lost their ass in this.
No, there's, yeah.
Specifically farmers.
Yes. So just to...
So yeah, that average may be only $800. Well, for me, it was probably like $4 or $5, and they...
Yeah.
$120,000.
And so just to stand corrected, the average salary in America from the United States Census Bureau in 2017 was $56,000, or 56, to be exact, $56,516. So yeah, and you're absolutely right. That is an average, right? And it doesn't mean that I paid more. Certainly if I was, you know, if I built a house and the cost increased.
Yes.
I did. However, I think a vast majority of those goods were already in the United States. So, but at the time, however,
did you bring them in from outside the U.S., man?
Bring them in from outside. How dare you? But yes, certainly the spectrum is that it didn't cost you anything or it cost you your business. And I think that
it was like a binary option.
Either affects you or either doesn't affect you or you lose your business. Zero sum game for some people. But I think that was what I had a problem with, is that for quite a while, at least the administration was.
You felt like the narrative was that it wasn't hurting anybody.
It was only, America was only winning. And look, I realized that, why would the administration come out and say, like, look, we're going to have to take a sacrifice. Everyone's going to have to take, on average, an $800 sacrifice over the.
Well, they did acknowledge that. To the agricultural community, and that's where they came from with the subsidies. I'm not saying that covered it all, but the administration did acknowledge that fact. I mean, if necessary, I can pull up the tweets, but
mm-hmm. And
not saying they didn't say anything.
No, that's you're right. I think it's just kind of the way. I guess so. For example, and I'm not trying to compare. It might be an apples to oranges comparison, but. At least in like World War II, everyone knew the sacrifice that needed to be made. And I'm not trying to attribute a Chinese trade war with the death of Americans. That's not really the point here. The point is that a narrative was created that sacrifice was needed in order to benefit America in general. And that just really wasn't done here. Maybe it was just to a few people. I just feel like there could have been more support garnered by the American people.
78% of the country's never been on Twitter, so.
Yes, so I feel as if there's a possibility that we could have created more impact, at least from the perspective of the Chinese looking into America, going like, listen, the entire country is for this change, and maybe we could have come to the table earlier. But, you know, again, that's a lot of what-ifs, and I'm
happy. Well, that's true, though. That might have been a missed opportunity in reality for the administration.
It could have.
That would have been a gamble.
It would have been a gamble.
I mean, if you think about it strategically,
but
you're doing, in effect, is putting out bad information about your own administration.
I guess it could have been, and I think, again, we're playing Monday morning quarterback here, that, there's a couple of things
people
that...
people would see the vulnerability as... like them trying to be intimate with the American people. I don't know.
Well, I guess I just think that there's a number of things, regardless of political affiliation, that most Americans can agree to. So if you hate Republicans if you hate Democrats and I hate Republicans, and someone in the middle polled and said, is China sort of unfairly gaming the system? We would both acknowledge yes. The difference is one of us might take that as an opportunity and the other one may not. And that would be the only difference. But it wouldn't.
That's in effect what's happened.
Yeah, but it doesn't affect the fact that we would both agree. So in a way, I think there could have been there could have potentially been a unifying case to be made around
this. It could have been a unifying moment, yes. I guess...
But again,
I guess that's perhaps a consequence of the fact the administration doesn't want to engage with the media, period.
And that's fine, because I mean, I think that the Trump administration could have made, they made the case anyway, and I don't.
He could have come on here.
Yeah, he could have come on here. I don't think that the media was necessarily against the trade war. Because I think everyone recognized that something needed to happen, so it wouldn't have mattered if Obama did this or Trump did this.
Well,
Trump
just did it. You've raised a really good point here that I haven't really thought of it along these lines, but really, honestly, you do raise a good issue in a nonpartisan sense, saying, Donald, Mr. President, you really missed a moment here, possibly, to real opportunity to the people who were behind the administration's point on this. They weren't necessarily behind him, but with further engagement,
Yeah. Again, missed opportunity.
That's a good thought, though.
It doesn't really matter now, but it's certainly something to think about in the future, because I don't think this, I mean, this certainly could happen again. And I guess where that leaves us now is that part of the...
Maybe they should engage more because their policy points aren't that bad.
No, they're not.
As holistically?
They're really not. And
the personality.
And I think that there, some of the wins from this, we certainly can talk about that.
The First Step Act, why wasn't that being...
First Step Act being the criminal reform justice system, okay. Rather.
And it's the first step. More needs to be done, obviously. But
I think
that
could have
been a much bigger win than it was.
I think what's hard, John, is, you know, and I'll get back to the not merits, but the sort of wins from the phase one that happened on Wednesday. But I think it's
hard for you and others and me at times to get past the voice behind the message.
Sure,
I get it.
But here's the other thing too. So let's just examine and where a lot of people have issues. And I'm not saying that people had issues with the first step. I don't think that was the case. I think it's the overall package deal. Now, bear with me on this. Now, I'm not saying that Eric Garner and Obama didn't have their fair share of issues with gun smuggling into Mexico, etc. Right? There's hypocrisies all the time. I think what becomes problematic is that when you have an administration that's willing to push forward something like First Step, but then has a Department of Justice that sort of perpetuates the inequity of judgment or going against or you know, not easing, we'll just say, criminal justice issues. Or I would say, let me articulate this better. When you create something like First Step, but then have a hard-ass law and order sort of DOJ or attorney general or an asshole like Jeff Sessions. I mean, regardless, he just kind of is like a little troll, or William Barr.
So what are you accusing them of?
I'm not accusing them of, I'm not accusing them
okay,
of anything,
but, you, there's,
but there's
a,
there's
that
a,
you
there's
need
a huge,
to fill in
yeah,
here.
I will. There's just a huge juxtaposition between something like First Step and then
and?
The rest of sort of the policy surrounding the administration. So, for example, I think, and I'm not saying this is necessarily how I believe. However, what I'm just looking at it from a lens, like a public opinion.
No, I just
lens.
Want an example.
So an example would be, let's say that Obama and Eric, you know, we're talking about law and criminal justice reform. So I'm adding in the DOJ and the Attorney General here. So when you have someone like Obama, who's fairly progressive, at least for his time, and then Eric Garner, who's willing to
Eric Holder.
Or excuse me, Gardner. Good night. Thanks for that. I'm thinking of cases in my head of criminal justice issues.
I knew why.
Yeah, I apologize. Yeah, Holder, excuse me. That's a huge miss there. Holder, who's willing to go forward with those sort of easings of some of the true justice issues. So when if Obama were to enact First Step, there would be sort of a clear move forward through the entire administration, meaning that when we say that we are going to cut back on, I don't know, just you name it, we're not going to imprison African American males at a disproportionate rate for the same drug crimes. I'm not saying any of this is part of First Step, but what I'm saying is if you hear that from Obama, it's going to be, you know, that that's going to translate to the Attorney General or the DOJ, at least Holder at the time. When you hear that from Trump and you look over to the Attorney General and the DOJ and you see it as someone like Jeff Sessions, it isn't immediately clear how this is really going to work or how well these individuals really truly care about this.
You know, he wasn't Attorney General when First Step happened, right?
No, I realize that. I do know that. However, I'm thinking of the brand of individual. William Barr, I don't think, is much better.
Now, all right.
Hey, look.
Hey, come on.
Do you see what I'm getting at? Do you see what I'm getting at? I don't feel like
I understand that was the same administration that told you if you liked your doctor and your plan, you could keep it.
I realize that. I'm not saying that there aren't issues on both sides.
No,
I don't feel like I'm grasping at straws here. Like, it's good. First step is good.
The same Bill Barr that worked for George H.W. Bush?
Yeah, I am, but...
What's wrong with him?
What's wrong with him? I don't think we can point to anything I don't say ethically, but certainly in a legal standpoint, there's nothing wrong with him. It's perspective, man. Like, that's what it is. Like, why didn't First
Step... You feel like he doesn't care?
Why didn't First Step hit as well with Trump's administration than it would have with maybe an Obama's administration or a Hillary Clinton's administration? Or it's perception. It's that kind of
law... So what is your perception?
What is my perception? That's a good question. In terms of First Step, and we will get back to the trade war... In terms of first step, I think why it wasn't that
I'm
much.
I'm putting you on the spot here. I feel bad.
No, it's fine. Because it makes me have to articulate the point.
This.
Listen, here's where the problem again. It's perception. We're looking at this from a very. This is. I don't want to get too analytical about
it. You feel like it's not a policy priority for the president.
Well, it was a policy priority. I mean,
but follow up on it. Where's the follow up they talked about?
Maybe that's part of it. But the other part of it is, you have to question the not validity, but the place from which it's coming. Right.
The motive.
So, not the motive, but the actual overall level of caring and. This ability to follow through with it, right? So when you've got a president who talks about illegal immigrants, who most definitely part of our justice system, like they are by being here, they're subject to it, and they're in and out of it. When he speaks about individuals in a certain way, or he talks about certain nations a certain way, or he takes, he really is not an inclusive individual. And I think it becomes problematic when you try to make changes for a marginalized group, whether you think they're right or wrong, that being criminals. People just question the validity by which it's done. And
I mean, the law is the same regardless.
That's true. But in terms of impact, like broad impact, getting people behind it, people getting jazz, getting momentum behind it, which I think is what drives a lot of political change is momentum. And Trump, by the nature of who he is, could garner a lot more momentum over bipartisan things he does, but by nature of the way he acts and the way he talks, and I don't mean the absolute unarticulate way that he talks, but just the way he delivers, the just asshole nature that the president can be, it's hard to get momentum for bipartisan things like, we'll say...
The USMCA.
Or the trade war in China, or... First Step. And it took me several minutes to get to that point, and that's what happens when you make me think about things on this podcast.
Well, but, we didn't talk about that beforehand. I feel bad.
No, it's fine. It took me a while to get to the point that we lose momentum on these things because people question the place that it's come from. And because of the individual that he is. And I'm not saying, excuse me, had to cough and hit the mute there. I'm not saying that what he's done is wrong or he's overwhelmingly good. It's the right direction to go, but we just lose momentum because we really can't harness that true public opinion momentum behind these things. So long-winded. So let's get back to the trade war phase one. And it's at this point, there's been some, what they call technology transfer or, In China, if you're unaware, and I could be butchering these statistics a bit, but we'll just use the more liberal number here, that when you start business in China, that you really are forking over a lot of information in order to do business there. And which is why China does a really good job at copying things. They don't do a great job in developing things. They do a really good job at copying things.
Do they?
Do they? Is that a question? A real question?
Wait, have you ever bought any of these products?
Well, it isn't so much products necessarily
I say that as someone who has. It's hit or miss.
Oh, yeah. In the manufacturing side, it's really hit or miss. However,
buying direct, I mean.
The more dangerous part is the technology transfer and sort of intellectual property transfer. And a lot of the intellectual property is just straight stealing. So
we got a lot of listeners in Hong Kong.
And
not on this platform.
I was going to say, I'm not calling out the people of Hong Kong. It's definitely the government.
No. I'm giving them a shout. What's up, guys?
What's up, guys? Keep doing what you're doing. Honestly.
You're here.
And then the other part of this is, I think it's something in the tune of like $220 billion, roughly, of goods that China will have to purchase from the United States. I think largely it's agricultural products. The issue with this is that how we will be able to keep China accountable for this. Another part of this was the United States has, or at least the administration has, walked back their currency manipulator status. I don't know what the status is called, which was a win for China. And
currency manipulator.
Yeah, currency manipulator. And they've walked that back. And China said they haven't done that for a while. But the problem with currency manipulation, obviously, is it gives you a competitive edge in terms of exporting. And how we will hold them accountable, I'm not entirely sure. So obviously more is to follow, but overall,
the threat of new tariffs,
yeah, which there are tariffs still in place. It's not as if they have been lifted.
No.
And so to think that they're just lifted and it's back to usual is won't be the case, but,
hey, but a tip of the hat here is necessary to one President Donald Trump for this. I mean, I don't care your position on the spectrum. A win is a win is a win. And we've had every administration since Carter that has complained about these issues with China, and one that has been willing to do something about it.
Yeah. And I tip my hat too. Again, I think as soon as we knew this was going to happen, it wasn't for the gain of the president himself. I mean, he came in here and did what he said he was going to do. And it's certainly not far from over, but as much as people don't like it, it really does have to happen in terms of more equitable world economics. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So,
well, yeah, it had to be solved. I mean, regardless, yeah. And it was. I mean, sure, in a sense, no pun intended, a manufactured crisis. But
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it was apparently necessary.
Indeed. And I think, you know,
they had no regional voices of support in their defense. Notice that?
Yeah, I agree. You know, so the other thing, too, that I think sort of the geopolitics of this entire thing is China. You brought this up in precast. I thought was interesting that China really needs the United States more than the United States needs China. America could bring back manufacturing and I think probably for better or for worse, self-sustain, where for listeners, and we've talked about it before, but the GDP, just because China's GDP exceeds the United States or is on track to continue to exceed the United States, it doesn't mean that GDP exceeding one other country's GDP is necessarily good. I think it's probably...
Especially if it's all public spending.
Exactly. So just to kind of break this down for listeners, that obviously GDP is a number of things.
And our federal government, the American government, accounts for a guesstimated 20 to 23%.
Whereas the majority of our GDP is made up of what we would call consumption, right? So it's what it's the spend, it's services, it's products that we're buying, it's consumer driven and business driven. Whereas China's, the inverse is China, where
it's over 70%, isn't it?
Yeah, something crazy like that percentage made up of government spending, which means that in the China will do something similar to what the United States did in the 2008 financial crisis called quantitative easing, which means that the central bank essentially just prints a crap ton of money. And where China does this similarly, but not just with currency, but with an artificial sort of labor force, government subsidized projects, and that an example of that would be the Silk Road that they're building from China all the way to Africa. And what I think is interesting would be this sort of sustainability of that. Whereas with the GDP of the United States, for the most part, it's not sustainable until, it's sustainable until, it's sort of like debt's okay until it's not. And then you go through a cycle and you sort of reset. But when it implodes in China, it will implode in a horrible way. And that's what's, to me, is interesting about this concept that China needs us more than we need it. And I think a lot of that with no real huge econ background probably has to do with the fact that it really is sort of, or at least its per capita GDP, or the amount of money that its average citizen makes, is still fairly low, and the majority of its GDP is made up of government.
So China claims it's 35%, and that was before the quantitative easing of the trade war. I don't know if I believe that.
Chinese government spending?
That's what they get, the statistic they gave to the IMF.
All right. Well, what I will say is that the consumption base of their GDP certainly is rising, and as the per capita GDP of a country does rise, then of course its consumption will rise as well. That's pretty basic. Obviously, if the demand increases because people are making more money, the supply will increase and the whole consumption model increases. But 35%, that seems...
I'm not sure if I believe that.
That seems pretty low. anyway, so more to follow. Let's move on now to some impeachment stuff.
Yes, Lord, we will ride with you.
Jesus, take the wheel.
God, this bloody mess.
So, okay. So, let's just be... I'm going to be fairly...
You told me we were through.
I was sorely mistaken. Going to cough. Hold on. Pausing.
Don't do it.
All right, there we go.
No, I know. It's like Hydra.
Yeah, I know. So... I just want to be fairly clear here. Let's start from the 30,000 foot view and say, I don't think there's any revelation that comes out between now and the Senate trial commencing that's going to change Mitch McConnell's mind. Now, the Senate does only need what? Four votes.
Four
defections from the GOP to come over to the other side.
Because the vice president cannot vote.
Exactly. Needs four defections in order to just bring witnesses to the trial. Witnesses would be...
You got Murkowski, Collins, Romney. Who's your fourth?
It's a good question. You pick my
three.
The
one from Arizona.
McKay? What's... Is it McKay?
McSally.
McSally? McKay? Not or McCain,
Gardner.
But a
McGardner. Gardner would be willing to join.
So...
What about Cory Gardner?
Cory Gardner? No way. Nope. Nope.
He's trying to. That's a purple state, man.
It is, but I don't.
He's got to kiss the ring.
Nah, not happening. I don't know that he's that Trump loyal, but I don't think you see that defection.
So Murkowski, Collins,
and
Romney,
and especially because Jason Crow, who's a Colorado native, will be on the. He's on the list of managers for the Democrats. So I just don't. I don't see that. I don't see that happening. That would ruffle some feathers in Colorado.
Are you surprised that your boy from Michigan, Justin Amash, wasn't a manager?
No. No. I think, regardless of what...
I wasn't surprised. I thought it was a missed moment for her, but...
It could have been, but I think they really needed strong... Well, okay, so I think you obviously have to pick rising stars and people that are good at litigation, and I think all of them... are. So aside from the defection possibility, and they would bring people to witness like, Pompeo, Bolton, and the likes. But what I find more fascinating about this entire thing are these little side stories that keep popping up around impeachment.
And I just love John Bolton calling saying he didn't want anything to do with Giuliani's drug deal.
Yeah, so look, I'm not going to lie.
I hear him saying that with that mustachio. He looks like the Monopoly man.
That drug deal.
Yeah, I mean, it just, he looks like the Monopoly. You can see the Monopoly man. He's like, no, officer, I know what drugs look like, and I'm pretty sure these are drugs.
So I won't lie that the whole Giuliani,
it's bizarre.
Yeah, and then his little associate Lev Parnas, and then
however you say it,
Parnas.
That's how I say it.
And look, the last one being David Nunes, who's just been drawn into this.
He's back. How is he linked up in all this?
Okay, you want to know?
All right. I'd love to.
All right, hold on.
I saw his name in the headlines, and I couldn't do it. No.
So look, here's, regardless of how he's drawn in, okay?
Oh God.
The fact that he had such a prominent position in the House impeachment inquiry is what I think bugs a lot of people. So,
well, no, but it is important how he's got up in this.
So let me read from the Washington Post. This article was January 18th, which is today.
Of course, it's the WAPO.
So. But I mean, if it's news,
did the Afghan. If it's papers, news, a massive tip of the hat to them.
If it's
for
news, it's news. Okay.
No. I get it.
This is by Aaron Blake. A month ago, when phone records showed contact between David Nunes and Lev Parnas, Nunes says he didn't recall Parnas's name and couldn't confirm the call. Now, this is not part of the article, but what I find hilarious, and it's just popping popcorn moment, is all of these people who are like, yep, never knew the guy, and it's like one picture after another. Now, I'm not saying that you take a photo with somebody and you remember who they are, but just outright.
Is there a picture of him and Devin Nunes?
I don't know about Devin Nunes, but at least with Trump and his group.
Let's take a look. Do continue.
So, yeah, you look that up. So he couldn't confirm the call. This is back to the article. On Wednesday, with Parnas about to appear on TV for the first time, Nunes suddenly offered a very conveniently timed confirmation, but he downplayed the call as being about random things. Now, Nunes' claims about his ties to Parnas are even more questionable. Newly released documents Friday night showed Parnas in repeated contact with Nunes' aide, Derek Harvey. He appeared to be looping Harvey into the Ukraine effort led by Rudolph W. Giuliani, and the messages showed that the three of them met at the Trump Hotel in Washington. Parnas also set up calls for Harvey with the same Ukrainian prosecutors who are working with Giuliani. And in one exchange, there's an indication Harvey may have known this was all about Joe Biden. This is an excerpt. Says, also, do you want to interview the general prosecutor who got ditched by Biden? Also, the anti-corruption prosecutor. Let me know. Parnas wrote this on April 19th. Harvey responded, does tomorrow work? Harvey even apparently became angry that Parnas and Giuliani were sharing documents with conservative journalist John Solomon rather than Nunes' office. The combined picture is a Nunes aide who was pretty abreast of what Giuliani and Parnas were up to the point where he was meeting with them and expressing frustration at not being the recipient of their information. And this isn't easy to square with the picture painted by Nunes. Nunes, the top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, has suggested Parnas was just a person he didn't know who was spouting a bunch of stuff that he wasn't clued in on. I checked it with my records, and it was very clear. I remember that call, which was very odd, random, talking about random things. And I said, great, you know, talk to my staff, and boom, boom. This is what Nunes said on Fox News on Wednesday. That's just normal operating procedure. The newly revealed text messages suggest this was a call that Harvey set up for his boss. Harvey set Parnas Nunes' contact information on April 10th, which is 2 days before phone records indicate the call took place. The call, according to the phone records, lasted 8 minutes. So overall, there's some indication that perhaps Nunes wasn't as intimately involved in the situation as Harvey was. I'm just reading on here.
He knows more than he's intimated.
Essentially. So
yeah, there's something on here. There's no picture that I can see, but the Daily Beast ran in the past that he apparently, he's Parnas supposedly helped Nunes's investigations.
Yeah. So one thing we know about Nunes is that
he's shady.
He's just been weirdly involved with the Trump administration. It's almost like he kind of wants to be a gopher. Like he really wants to be friends. He really is willing to do the dirty work.
He wants to see his name in lights.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, as this move, if this becomes more of a spotlight issue, obviously Nunes can distance himself and say that it was really my aide that was operating.
I'm sorry, he's a shade, sir.
But listen, it's bullshit. Aides don't just go do all this work.
Well, doesn't mean he did anything illegal or wrong, but what I'm saying is there's more to the story than he's allowing here.
That's just the thing. There's way more to this entire story.
Don't say you don't know the man.
Exactly. There's way more to this entire story.
It makes it look worse.
It does, and I think Pelosi...
Today's technology, you don't think that's going to come out?
Yeah, I think reporters asked a really good question to Pelosi, be like, look, more and more information's coming out. Why did we push this through so quickly? And a lot of that's just political calculation and the fact that, their argument, Pelosi's argument was, the longer we draw this out, the more Trump is going to just desecrate national security, et cetera.
The American people lose interest, more importantly.
Exactly. I was going to say there's far more political calculation to this than national
security. Yeah, I think the national security argument is bullshit.
It is. However, a lot of what politicians talk about is bullshit.
Right.
However, what I just find these side stories far more interesting. And this Parnas going on CNN with Anderson Cooper recently, here's...
Self-preservation.
It's complete self-preservation. Okay, so this guy's wrapped up in this. There's been charges filed against Parnas for, essentially, it's just securities fraud, and which is no small thing, but it is. And he's pretty embroiled in this entire thing. Now, as more and more comes out as to how he was involved, I think it obviously was in his best interest to step up and be like, yo, this is actually what's going on. Because look, if something were to, let's say the information a couple months ago started coming out, or when this impeachment inquiry started, information starts coming out about this guy, and then he suddenly gets a heart attack. No one cares. No one looks into it. Now he goes public with all this information he has and starts to corroborate it with text messages, etc. Now it looks a lot weirder if the guy dies of a heart attack. And here's what I think. This isn't Michael Cohen going before any sort of committee in the House, who has already been, at the time, was found guilty, was going to go to jail for 3 years, and then...
lying to the United States Congress.
Yeah, and then goes up and gives a sob story of all his background, and then everyone on the GOP side's like, look, this guy's not credible. I agree. The guy's not credible. Could be telling the truth, but he's not credible. This is different. Parnas may have lied, may have broken the law.
Parnas is a thug.
He's a thug, but it doesn't mean that
Cohen was a professional liar. Yeah.
Cohen, exactly. That's the difference. There's a difference between a thug and a professional liar. And in this case, Parnas got busted for breaking the law for securities and exchange issues. Not so when he comes forward with evidence and continues to give evidence, like, for example,
he's
trying to save his own ass. And you can't discredit someone.
I can't say he's wrong.
It's hard to discredit people when he's like, no, it's BS. They know who I am.
Like, I'm not hanging myself in prison.
They know who I am. The president and everyone can say, I have no idea who this guy is. I'll just keep showing you pictures and text messages and exchanges. Like, they know exactly who I am.
No, I get it.
So when Parnas says the president of the United States knew exactly what I was doing and what Giuliani was doing all the time, is it hard to not believe him? I think.
I'm not so sure how much I believe the line about the president.
Well,
but Giuliani
for sure. And you don't think I would just say, I'm not saying that the president knew what time he was landing in the Ukraine. However, Trump likes to be involved in things. He's Trump's a bit of a micromanager. It's hard for me to believe that he didn't know what was going on if Rudy Giuliani was directing it, that Rudy Giuliani wouldn't tell him.
I'm not going so far as to say I believe that Giuliani was directing the whole thing. I'm saying that I think this guy ought to be heard from, because there's obviously more going on than what a United States congressman is admitting. So we can't subpoena Devin Nunes. I can see that shit show now. But I'd want to hear from this guy.
I do too. And I think that's what we said in precast. It's like,
I'm not saying I believe in him. Yeah, I just want to hear from him.
I kind of want to hear from him. I really didn't care about hearing from Cohen. I do, however, kind of want to hear from this guy. I just want
to
see
hear from Don McGahn.
I would like to hear from him as well. I just think what's...
I'd like to hear from Giuliani.
What I think is interesting is I think Parnas is far more willing to just give up information. He's like, man, I'm willing to spill everything to you. Where Giuliani is not,
he's scared, and
McGahn's not. I think Parnas is like, there is no presidential pardon for me whatsoever. I am the fall guy, and I'm not going to fall. I'm not going to be able to fall on this sword like Giuliani can. I'm gone. I'm cooked. No one claims me after this. So he's in self-preservation mode. I agree.
Right. I get it. It doesn't mean that everything he's saying is true, but it does mean I want to hear it.
Yeah. I'm saying the one thing about human nature is that if you do one thing wrong, now everything you say has to be taken with a grain of salt. It's sort of like being labeled insane. Once you get that definition,
you're crazy doesn't help you.
It's just not going to work. Anything you say, you can always be, everyone can approach it with that label. So he very well could be telling the complete truth.
Never date a psychoanalyst. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's true. Or just don't ever be labeled insane, I suppose. That'd be the other way to look at it.
That is the trick now, isn't it?
Indeed. So, well, I know we're rolling up on 45 minutes, and that's kind of all.
And you know what that means.
You do know what that means. And I don't want to keep belaboring the impeachment, because I know we will have to talk about it some more as it rolls on. So I wanted to touch on more of the side stories that were going on at the moment.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we'll do the updates, but yeah, we'll try and keep the insanity stay down to a minimum.
Well, and I truly believe that I think the insanity will stay at a minimum, because I just don't think that the Senate trial will be anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You say that, just wait until it's convention time and it ends up being, Joe, this is a big effing deal, Biden versus Donald grabbing him by the meow, Trump.
That's true.
Then.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I can tell you that certainly some episodes that'll be coming up, and maybe not the next one, but the Iowa caucus is about to happen,
mm-hmm.
followed by, what is it, New Hampshire and
South Carolina.
Yep, and then Nevada will be coming up at some point, right? Yeah. I don't know the timeline and all of it.
No, but I know Biden may as well already go ahead and put South Carolina in his column.
Yep. So there are some interesting things, obviously.
The Warren Sanders feud.
Well, so there's the Warren Sanders feud, but also the fact that Warren and Sanders need to be back in Washington for the impeachment trial in the Senate.
Serves him right.
Which leaves the real other front runner, Joe Biden, to sort of be out on the campaign trail personally, where the other two have to be back. So how that all plays out, I'm not entirely sure, but we will.
That was Mitch McConnell's plan.
I mean,
they met about this months ago.
Although, is this really the plan? Because, quite frankly, if you're Mitch McConnell, would you rather have Bernie or Warren running against President Trump or Joe Biden?
Man, no, it wasn't his plan. I'm kidding.
I know, but an interesting question nonetheless. So these are definitely things that are coming down the pike.
If it was tomorrow, Biden's got the best shot.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
But it ain't tomorrow.
No, it ain't tomorrow. We got a whole nother year of this, folks. So,
yes.
So, as always, until next time.